It's May 26, 1998 with Greg Greger. So we'll let that run, and it just gives me a backup from any notes I take. You mentioned about monitoring fuel ruptures, going to find out which tube it was in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen this list. It's not complete, but these are some of the topics we had started with. Problems, things that came along that required innovation, problem solving. And we'll want to add to that as topics come up.
Correct.
And we'll want to fill them out as well with people's experiences.
The technical people wanted to refer to a fuel element rupture as fuel element failure. I guess technically there were some that swelled instead of ruptured.
Okay, right.
But
okay.
It caused the same kind of problem. Or not quite, but...
I'll make a note of that and we'll mention that. Yeah.
Another point, although we had daily and weekly limits under certain conditions, our supervision could allow a week's dose in one job if necessary. So it was a little bit flexible.
And you're saying for any workers there? Okay. And that was probably, I mean, you mentioned a snippet, but that was probably a 500-page document that described how, when, and where, and how much, and what situations. Well, let's back up a bit and just, when you went in, what allowed you to become a health monitoring person? What training, what background?
I had been a commercial photographer for a couple of years.
So you're familiar with instruments, yeah.
Because a friend who I knew in college in engineering had gotten a job here, and Margaret and I were interested in having read about the Columbia Basin irrigation. We thought this is a coming area. I drove out by myself and visited him, and he worked for the plant as a radiation monitor supervisor, or tech grad then, I think used to call him. And he said, well, they're hiring monitors, why don't you check in? So I first checked in and gave my photography qualifications, and they said, well, we do have a photography job, but it's in identification. We think you're overqualified. Wouldn't give it to me, but we're hiring monitors, so
okay.
I needed a job and I became
one. Yeah, okay, and that's the typical story about they needed lots and lots of people during construction, after construction, and for jobs that never existed anywhere else. And you didn't need to be a doctor to do it. You needed to understand instruments, data keep collection.
You worked with other people who were more experienced, and there were periodic sessions of school and handling the instrument and learning how to set the dose rate per hour was the standard figure. You can work here 1 hour, or you can work here 2 hours.
And
or if it's less than 6 millirads, you could work there 8 hours.
And for a human, well, it's my understanding there's two ways to look at the dose you're getting. One is just what's the immediate intensity of it versus what's my dosage been all day long. Is there a word for that?
I guess I've forgotten it if it was mentioned. We didn't concern ourselves much with that. We were mostly setting time limits for the job at hand, and if the job was clean and the person just had a little background radiation, we set up the job and left them. But if they were handling radioactive material, then you had to remain aboard.
So the bottom line for your work was simply to calibrate how much any individual worker was getting.
This is an estimate which was checked each week by the pencils, we called them then, they were dosimeters, and the badge at the end of the month, so two checks.
Let's talk about those two instruments. The pencil was a what?
What did they call it? Sorry, that's escaped me. Anyhow,
there was a technical term for it, but...
Yeah, it was read daily, And what it was is a signal that this person may have gotten more than we knew about, and therefore they would then pull his badge and process it. So they wouldn't let somebody go on and on and on the rest of the month when he might have inadvertently gotten more than the record showed.
And what did it take to process the badge?
No big deal. This is done by, controlled by Battelle, but we had the, our manager had the authority to ask all that done.
So the pencil was just an easier one to read?
We couldn't read it directly. Later they had some that they could visually read.
Yeah.
This was before that. We had to take it down to the badge house where the, quote, badge girls worked. And they had a little machine to punch it into, and it immediately gave the reading.
Okay. So on any given day, would you have the book that had all the each employee's past dosages?
We didn't normally have to watch that. They just gave us monthly the overages, or in some special case, we would follow through and find out. But it was pretty routine the way it was, unless there was some exception.
Okay.
And you get into some weird ones. Occasionally. I was only on the job in H area a couple of weeks when one of these happened. They had a fuel failure and couldn't push it out. And one of the techniques that sometimes worked was to discharge the tube next to it and then have a two casts placed on these two tubes and pull the ones from the tube that had the failure, pull all the loose ones out the front into that cask, transfer,
right,
and go down the other.
Okay.
Well, that day it didn't work, and a hot one fell down the front face.
Oh, I was just reading about that. Yeah, somewhere else. Okay.
And our radiation monitor office was down the first corridor from the work area, and you got a CP off scale as soon as you went beyond the corner.
Like how far away?
Well, from
the
slug? 30 or 40 feet. And from the slug, it was another 50 or so. And
really? You were 80 feet from the slug?
Yeah. But it was in a pit. It wasn't out in the open. There was some concrete shielding.
This came out the charging end, though, the front
yes,
face.
Yes, but the front end, the front face, if you pay attention to it, is...
Because right now they have that little rail in front of it, so you're not really right at it.
Right. If this is the front face here, there is a, we called it the snake pit.
Okay.
And then here is the work area up here.
And how deep is
that? That thing was in here, oh, maybe 6 or 8 feet.
Oh, so it was way down in concrete.
Yeah. So okay. When we were down here, it was indirect radiation. Well,
wow.
What do you do? Technical finally got a drum of water in here, or got a drum, filled it with water, and then, and I'm surprised radiation monitoring did, the day supervisor for radiation monitoring was a big man, 220. They took one of the heavy carts and built a wall of lead brick.
Yeah.
And he was supposedly behind that wall to go in and with tongs pick this up and drop it in the water. It worked, but we were kind of laughing about Bill Westover. His badge didn't show, it showed quite a reading, but not unreasonably, but I happened to notice that his tail end was sticking out from behind the lead bricks.
Yeah.
He should have had another badge there.
So how bad of a dose would you get if you were exposed to that? Just in terms of normal daily stuff, what was that equivalent to?
Well, we gave everybody away.
But I mean, if you were 6 feet from it for a minute,
that could be very serious.
Okay.
Hey, it could be fatal if you really get close to it.
Okay.
And we had occasionally stories coming through of things happening in other places where. In one case in Idaho, somebody was doing some checking on where's the fusion. I have this uranium here, and I have the neutron source here. And it's hard to imagine a technical person doing this, nudging one towards the other.
Oh.
And
yeah.
It slipped, and he grabbed it. He probably knew he was killing himself.
I think I read about that. It was just the hard way of testing criticality,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
Terrible way.
So let's go back to the normal daily routine. You would just be there to advise and recommend and require how much time people could spend in different areas?
Typically, processing guys would come in and say, well, we're going to do such and such a job. Would you set us up? So we would, but we'd know how before they got dressed, we would dress too and go and look it over and establish the dose rate for the day.
Okay. And that didn't involve people on the front face normally? Or did?
Well, it could be anywhere in the reactor. There was all kinds of...
So wherever you were, you were keeping some kind of track of
right.
it? Okay.
There were a few places that were so standard that
right.
people knew how much to take, but most of them needed to be checked.
Could somebody have spent 8 hours a day in the front face area all month long without it being an issue? Or was there enough leakage and...
No, with everything normal, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Although there were times due to incidents like this when
yeah.
the contamination had built up, and then they would do such things as try and decontaminate it and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But the front face was kept relatively clean, whereas the rear face they didn't do very much for because...
Sure. So anybody going back there would be logged in and out, and you'd look at where they'd been
oh, yeah.
the previous month or what?
You stay right with them, essentially.
Did you look at their whole history at Hanford of their exposure, or only... How did you decide how much was relevant for any individual?
Well, his monthly exposures on his badge when it was developed would go on to his record, and our supervisor would get a report that said, well, so-and-so's way over. He's got to be... And, of course, that goes through his supervision. He's got to be put on, what do they call that, light duty or something or other. No radiation duty. And maintenance, for example, had enough jobs they could switch their people around. They had coal jobs as well as with the reactor.
So theoretically, an employee might have gotten so much dosage over the years that he'd no longer be eligible?
Well, during a year, for a period of time, but then you regain... When
okay.
you get to the end.
Okay. They didn't have a lifetime dosage, or
they didn't talk much about it.
Maybe nobody ever
heard of that.
Yeah. Okay.
I went over my annual, at least 1 year as a monitor.
So it's kind of like vacation days. If you can accrue them as
yeah,
time goes
right,
by.
Right.
Okay. What was your instrument that you would take with you?
Primarily a CP. I don't know a technical name. The other name is Cutie Pie, and I don't know where that's been.
That's probably not the technical name, right?
That was a very convenient instrument.
Was it a clicker or a gauge? Or?
Yeah, you had three ranges on it, one gauge, and if it goes to max, you click the second range, and I didn't know how to be sure
yeah.
you know what range you're on.
Yeah, oh, right, yeah. Keep on making sure. And was that it? Was that all you used?
There were a few other fixed into the building alarms,
okay.
too.
But you weren't in charge of maintaining them, but you would respond to them?
We sent them in routinely to, once again, Battelle, who had the job of checking them, maintaining them. About every 2 weeks, there would be instrument pickup. They bring us new ones or not.
Okay.
Rechecked ones. And
okay, when you say instruments, I mean, there were people who were in charge of instruments, and I was always curious which instruments.
Yeah. The portable instruments is the right word for it, those that people held in their hands. Okay, CP is the main one. There were also Juno, was a little square job that would do about the same thing, except it could also measure alpha, but we had very little of that. But most of it was CP work. Then the other low-level work, of course, was a Geiger counter where you wipe things with a towel or with your shoe covers, a floor, and then put the thing right on them, and it would show you how many hundred counts a minute.
If the Juno was looking for alpha, what was the CP looking for?
Gamma.
That was always the problem?
Yeah. And some beta. you could have beta, which is short range, you know.
It would detect that too?
Yeah. You had a cover on it, and if you took the cover off...
Okay. Because the cover would block the lighter...
Right.
Okay.
I didn't observe this, but I knew the man who'd done it. They had a failure, and they, out of the front face, I guess, or rear, I'm not sure which, they knew they had a beam of neutrons, which we really tried to avoid. And because he was trying to prove a point, he said, look, turn on his CP, stand in front of this beam, and show that it's changed to gamma when it comes out.
Ooh, just a little science experiment?
Yes.
It was his energy that was being converted.
It was.
Yeah, okay. Can't do that too long. So the instrument people who dealt with the instruments in the control room didn't deal with your instruments?
No.
Okay. What about the built-in ones that measured in different areas?
I think that was kind of a combination of responsibility.
Okay.
We would check them,
okay.
And we also had sources that we could check them by. We would go in the control room and say, I'm going to put the source on such a one, and they'd see that if their reading came up, you know,
okay.
It should come up. These kind of cooperative
mm-hmm.
gestures.
Mm-hmm. How much control, you must have had, what's another job I was thinking of? You had ultimate say in certain situations of how the work would be done and how long people would stay in there?
Not how it's done as much as do you continue or do you stop. We could stop any job, and sometimes you have to, until people reevaluate, because you're saying, I can't control the radiation level these people are going to get the way we're doing it.
Was there like, it sounds like there could have been pressure on you.
There was.
Yeah, yeah, because...
Production.
Yeah, that was always the key thing. I think you mentioned the trying to, if there was a fuel failure or something like that, you'd try to get it fixed in less than a half hour so the reactor could get back up to speed.
Right. During that period, they had developed what they called the quickie equipment.
Yeah.
And I guess you know the story.
I've seen the word mentioned. It was in something Michelle Gerber wrote.
Yeah.
That
it was a special tip-off that was put on the offensive tube. You would go and find the tube first. And that was usually fairly apparent, but not always. The best way is to put your CP all around it and see which one was the highest.
From the rear face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the rear elevator. And if you think you've got it, and sometimes mistakes were made, but they would put this tip-off equipment on, special equipment, open the cap, get out, and then the front face would discharge dummies in to see if it'll push.
Okay.
And you, of course, would need to get out of there.
And all that was happening within a half hour.
Well, yeah. It's less than that, usually, depending on...
Had they already shut down the reactor by the time you'd go back there?
What they would do is, you knew you had a problem, you go in, dress up, the monitor and usually at least chief operator and maybe two more operators are standing at the rear face door, and by they would say, well, we're ready, so they would shut it down and okay, go in.
Okay. And you would be probably the first one to go in with your instrument and see which process tube was had the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would take readings to see how bad the local radiation was, I guess?
Yeah,
and then
you had to give them a time limit,
yeah,
too.
And then say, okay, it's this high, so you have this much time to fix
yeah,
it.
Yeah, of course, you recognized usually that they could accept a very brief high one, as long as they didn't stay in it. And usually they could get the job done in maybe a minute.
All they had to do was uncork it, basically.
Well, put on this equipment, too.
On the rear face?
Typically, a tip-off. What a tip-off was, here's a process tube, here's the cap. You want to get this fuel far out
to
the next one to be
able
sure
to knock off.
Back. So it was a kind of a funnel arrangement. On a normal discharge, they had a short tip-off, only this long, but in this case, they wanted to get all the contaminated coolant water, so they had a big funnel-like thing.
Okay.
So they got it out a little further.
And then it would drop?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So when they, if that worked okay, your, I mean, your job was done at that point?
Well, not really quite. If it they discharged it, then you go back in and take off the equipment and plug up the tube.
And what would you be doing while they're doing that?
Setting their rates again.
Oh, okay. Because it would have changed then after it was open.
And so you were in there twice, and then as soon as we would be out the door, we would say, we're out, and they could start up, increase the water flow, and do all that. I may have mentioned casually to you this one time, processing people didn't like outages because they work harder.
Yep.
They like to stay operating, and so they like quickies to have to be successful. And we had one, and it went reasonably well, but we knew it was just about the limit. During all this, only the chief operator is in the control room. And the supervisor is somewhere there too, but
okay. The
chief operator. And all the others are busy. So you have to have a front-face crew and a rear-face crew, so it takes double. And we walked in and said, well, we got it out. You can take it up. And he said, it's up.
Yeah. Sounds like age-old problems that when people work together.
He did it himself. Actually, would you like some coffee or decaf or something?
Okay. Are you already making something or
instant hot water here?
How about cold water, glass cold water?
Sure.
Just, that'd be fun. Tap water.
Under those conditions, the conditions of the reactor would have changed so little that the control rods could move back almost to the position they were when they shut down.
Would they have records of that?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, every time they moved them, they kept the records, so people put them all back where they were. Yeah.
It wasn't, but I imagine. I just cringe when I think of that, compared with all the watching that's done now at a startup.
Well, yeah. Things didn't get looser, they got tighter as people learned more and more.
We were really lucky that we didn't have a really wild one.
I always wonder about that. I mean, it's sort of like the Titanic story, right? It's like, hey, everything's supposed to work.
Right.
And the Titanic, they did something stupid operationally, right? But, yeah, it is amazing, actually. Or it's amazing that it worked. Now, not that anything bad happened, but that it continued to work for months and years and did what it was supposed to.
It really did, and the fact that the reactors, when they were shut down, those old guys were operating at something like three times the level that they were intended to.
Any idea how that affected monitoring? Did the power levels significantly change the amounts that were in the rear face?
I don't remember that it noticeably did.
Okay. Somebody told me they didn't have to change the shielding, which surprised me.
No.
That the shielding they had built into it was sufficient.
Yeah.
I
think there was more water going through, so that indirectly provides some additional shielding around the irradiated slug. The other thing that we get involved with periodically is running an outage, you inevitably have some material that you can't clean up, even coveralls to some cases. People going in the rear, for example, and handling pretty high contamination, and sometimes mechanical things, so you'd have, they're going to bury material, so they had a trailer with a long tongue and pull it with a pickup truck and load the stuff on there, and you had a little bit more protection. You'd have to ride with them, and then they'd back up to the, there was a trench out back, and dump it.
We have a fancier word for that.
I guess so.
Yeah. How would they get the stuff out to the trailer? Would they put it in the barrel or something?
It had a No, dump it right in the trench. They had a way to dump the trailer.
No, how'd they get it into the trailer from the reactor?
Well, that had to be done piece at a time in whatever way they could.
Literally, it might have been a pair of coveralls that got contaminated.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for a while there, they were burying the dummies, aluminum dummies that, you know, position the slug, just because, sure, they were hot, but this is one of the biggest suggestion awards given when some operator said, hey, it's contamination, I think we could decontaminate them. And he got a couple $1,000s because it was a big saving in that idea.
Yeah, and reuse them. So when this stuff was going on, you were constantly walking around with your counter in front of you. I mean, that's basically how you spent your time, right?
Not quite
literally,
that, yeah.
But any time
things got to where they were pretty routine. I've seen shifts that everything's rocking along, that there may be only one or two calls in the whole shift, other than day shift.
And they had to call you if they were going to the rear face or something came up?
Yes.
Or the rod room?
I meant simple routine things.
Yeah,
they'd have to call.
But you were part of the procedure then?
Right.
Okay.
And it was a kind of a handling people situation, because you could imagine all the opportunities for one group to irritate the other if they worked at it.
Yeah. Getting in the way of our job. But on the other hand, it's like you're also protecting them, right?
Right.
So you'd think that it would just be the opposite, and that they'd be whining that you didn't get there fast enough and let them know what the deal is.
I knew this monitor. I didn't work the shift on him, but he used to be the kind that he checked. But like, for example, a common thing was the work order. Work area floor became slightly contaminated. It's supposed to be below 100 counts a minute. And they would wash it and do all that and have him check it again. And he said, it's almost there, but I can't release it. Like 120, you know. And sometimes some of these guys would wait about a half an hour, and then they go back and tell him, oh, we washed it again.
Let him come back out and count
check.
It?
Yeah, you got it this time.
Yeah.
EK.
Yeah. Or borderline, yeah.
There was a lot of borderline things that you had to use judgment on.
Yeah. Sometimes it was black and white, and a lot of times it was in between. Did your routine change much from when you first started, say, to in the later years?
Well, I was only a monitor for 4 years, and I became a journeyman, and then they made me supervisor, so it changed in that fashion.
Oh, right, okay.
The basic change, I think, was that when we got there, it was kind of the routine stuff, and then for increased production, there were some significant upgrades made, and these were big programs that took special maintenance people, even construction, to go through. And
like the 558 project later on?
I don't remember.
Where they increased the water supplies, the pumps and all that?
That, and putting in where we used to have tubes. The ribs in the tube, this ends, the slugs used to be like this, and then they made the I and E, inner and outer, where the water could also go through the center.
That kept them cooler.
But that didn't affect us very much, more water through. They decided that they wanted to add a safety feature to the vertical rods. So in addition to the vertical rod going into the pile, they had around each one a hopper full of steel balls, boron balls.
Yeah. That replaced the liquid they first started with, the reactor.
We never, that was never.
Yeah, during, yeah. The very first they had a liquid, and that would ruin the pile if it went in, I guess, so.
Putting in all this was quite a job, because we were taking out the rods and then the rod sleeves and replacing those and...
Difficult because of the monitoring that went on?
You couldn't be awfully close. It all had to be remote. And the readings were pretty high. High enough, for example, for some of this stuff, they knocked a hole in the reactor wall, and without touching them, the crane would take these things over to the hole, and it would slide into a trench down that long chute. So you didn't...
They took the whole control rod out and kept it whole ready to put back in?
No, not control rod, vertical rod.
But vertical ones. And they kept took it out all the whole thing?
It might have been just the thimble that was...
The sleeve thing?
I'm not sure anymore.
Although to get the thimble out, wouldn't you have to take the rod out?
You'd have to take the rod out of position, right.
But so maybe not all the way out of the building. Yeah.
You might ask Hank DeHaven or some of the others about that point. I don't recall that, but I was on that shift for a while. That was interesting.
And that required your constant checking up?
You had one or two people in doing the monitoring, try to reduce it to one, and then you'd have to have another person checking people coming off out of the work job, checking their clothes. So you had people in several places, and sometimes our exposure was not enough to last 8 hours, so we had to have people coming through.
Yeah, to spell you.
We had a shift, I think about four monitors on each shift to some part of this project.
When people were working on that, did they send their badges in for processing much more frequently?
I think they may have had...
They get the numbers wrong, which is what I would do.
Well, they got into a pretty good communications routine of repeating the number back,
through a telephone, or would they? Yes.
It was,
They couldn't just shout to the other side.
No. It must have been by a phone system, but it was pretty fair. And there was a lot of this confirmation of number, which you had to
make sure I got it right. So if you were in the rear face and a hot slug came out, within a few seconds you would have gotten way, way more dosage than you ever should have gotten. It seems like that would have been a common problem, just because there were so many thousands and thousands of those things coming out.
The routine they had set up was really quite good. Having it the procedure so that nothing should go wrong. And you had training in all this before any new man got there. He'd go with experienced people.
What about at the end of the day when they were getting tired and in a hurry and all the stuff that I normally do? Did things get slack every now and then where you had to go in and, kick butt or whatever the equivalent would be?
No, it wouldn't be our responsibility. I don't recall that. I think people had enough concern that this was important to their own well-being. But I don't remember a case like that.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Because it's easy to write the procedures book, and it's a different matter to always have people following things perfectly day after day after day.
Right.
That's certainly the way my life is.
I think this was also the morale between the supervisor, the processing supervisor, and the shift. If he could establish a good rapport with them that he would be fair about what assignments he makes and give them the breaks he could, but also get the work done and check all the procedures to be sure that they didn't get into something unforeseen. I think that's part of it. You always see both sides there. Some crews that hate their supervisor and others that think he's a pretty good guy.
They always stuck to, the supervisor was always working with the same crew?
Yeah, he'd be assigned to one A, B, C, or D shift and go around shift with,
Were you ever involved with a scram where everybody had to, leave the building?
No.
Other than that slug coming out or something like that, which is a known a known problem where people just left the area.
Well, even that, the rear face shielded that. That wouldn't have affected the rest of the building. The one on the rear,
right.
The one on the front, that was awkward.
But the whole building didn't go. Oh, people control room were okay.
I've never seen the whole building evacuated for that kind of reason.
A real scram where people were heading for somewhere else. No. Yeah. Well, that's good, too, because even now, when you go and take the little orientation, they talk about, you know, the five levels of sirens you might hear. And if you hear the fifth one, you know, get your rosary beads out or whatever it was. And, the fact that they haven't had to do that is pretty good. The fact that they knew they might have to, but never did, that's pretty good.
The processing operators, when they were burying with this trailer I mentioned, would sometimes... might have a load that was practically nothing, you know. And they come to the gate where the patrolman has to open the gate for them, and they would imply, oh, this is a hot one. You know, the patrol would run out there and swing that gate open and run back in. They'd go around the corner to laugh.
Yeah, that sounds difficult. I can do that. take a break for
to replace all the tubes, because we begin to have a lot of tube leakers, which would kill your reaction pretty fast. And another big program that was not as bad, the tube coming out had fairly high beta contamination on it, but aluminum doesn't seem to irradiate gamma-wise very much.
Sure.
And I think I mentioned to you one of the maintenance foremen came up with a really clever idea. I guess it was patented. What he suggested is he could make a splitter. They had push poles that were about slug size, maybe inch and a half in diameter, that would ride right on these and go all the way down the tube, and they had threads on the other end. Well, he devised this little thing, was only about this long, which would ride inside, and the front cross section of it would be like this. It was front ends were sharp, it would fasten right in there in the center, and they would start it with a chisel, slip these ends in, and then from the front with a hydraulic puller, that thing would just split them in two.
Just like a log
splitter. It would even roll them. If the tube had been here, this would go through, and it would end up like this, and they would come out really easy.
Yeah, it was aluminum, so it wasn't the toughest material to cut.
Huh. Clockworthy splitter.
And it didn't wreck the graphite around it?
No, it stayed in the channel because this push pole was in the unsplit part of it all the way out, see, ahead of it.
Okay.
They weren't pushing it, they were pulling it.
Okay.
It was quite clever, I think.
Yeah. And then once it split, they pull it out in pieces, kind of?
Push it out with another, or the same push pole or a different one.
And at the other end, somebody would have to cut it off as it came out?
Yeah, then they had cutters on there to cut it into a length they could handle.
Yeah.
I think it was 3 or 4 feet.
And how close were they standing to use that cutter?
I think it was quite remote.
Yeah, okay.
You can figure out cutters that would work.
Yeah, okay. You also mentioned the... something about you were one of the people who were reading the instruments of radiation contamination near B that turned out to be left over from a nuclear test in China?
Well, that was one of the what we call routine contamination checks you were supposed to finish in a month of various outbuildings, like away from the building, put on shoe covers and check this and that, and it didn't start with me, but one of the other monitors reported that there was contamination outside the building. And
that shouldn't have been there.
Shouldn't have been there. Couldn't think of why it would be there. You know, you first think, did they spread some during some burial?
Right.
But it didn't make sense. And it seemed like it went a couple of shifts. Everybody was shaking their head. And finally, another monitor took a towel and wiped the top of a car
and it was up there too. So immediately he said, well, that's a different story. It
comes from somewhere else.
The management, I suppose they knew it earlier, but they said, well, that has to be from the test. The weather people would have gotten into that. The weather crew at Battelle was much bigger than they are now. They had a huge meteorological crew.
To track where your stacks were going, but also the Russians and Chinese and everybody else.
Contacts with other places.
Site surveys, what were you referring to?
That's the kind of survey that I just mentioned.
Okay.
You go out to a certain site and check to see it's below or within limits.
And that was on a regular recurring basis?
Yeah, they didn't have it pinned down to a day, but they usually had a shift, we'll get these done in the next month.
Okay. What haven't I asked you that you were percolating through your mind? Either thinking about some of the things we're going to try and include in this document.
Well, I guess some of these things affected all the reactors, but if you find them interesting, I think they're worth mentioning about this one, because otherwise they won't get mentioned anywhere.
I think the idea is that there are some things we wouldn't talk about if it was specific to some other reactor, but if it's in health monitoring and relates to what would have happened anywhere, yes. If we're talking about a specific major problem that shut down a reactor but it wasn't B, then, well, maybe that's a side issue. But
the one that... I don't know if it's worth mentioning or not, but I thought it was rather incredible when, during the production push, Technical said, well, we're going to make arrangements to lower the temperature of the Columbia River, therefore get more production. And they did. Why? You know how they did it.
Was that the one where they asked the core to dump it from the bottom of the dam?
Yeah.
Yeah? And
it made a couple degrees.
And that's the kind of stuff that they were always trying to eke out an extra percentage in production.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, inlet temperature versus the outlet is essentially your production. So if you had two more degrees, the outlet, that would be the same in either case, before or after.
And yet they never bothered using the cooling plants on D&F?
I don't know the story of why those were not followed through. That was before my time.
Yeah, it might have just been too much hardware to deal with for what you'd get out of it. What a nightmare that must have been.
A couple of other guys, I may have run this name by you, Hank DeHaven.
I've heard the name, yeah. He's here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Bill Westover was the day person at H when I first went to work. I think if his health is okay, he lives in Benton City.
Oh, okay. So he was also in health monitoring. He was there before you.
Yes, they both were. And Bill was the man who rode the cart.
Who what?
Who rode the cart behind the lead bricks.
Oh, okay. Right.
He should have an interesting point of view on that.
Well, this will be great because really there's very few defining factors that make B reactor or any reactor look different from some other factory. Mm-hmm. And it's the health monitoring that all of a sudden says, oh no, this is not just, you know, making shoes or making gunpowder, it's something completely different. You weren't there during the Manhattan Project. What was secrecy like though when you were working there? I guess it was a little bit more relaxed. But you knew it was a nuclear reactor making plutonium?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay.
That was... I don't know exactly how this word was changed in security. I suppose they there must have been a lot of conferences on that after, you know, the news media announced the bomb. And then what were they going to say about security? We were still told, you know, don't tell anybody what they don't need to know.
When in doubt, don't say anything.
It was certainly emphasized, but...
You were one of the few people... Well, during the Manhattan Project, it sounded like if you were in charge of one part of the reactor, you didn't go nosing around the other parts, just for security reasons.
You need to, I guess.
Yeah, but you were a person who might go nosing everywhere.
Harry's rifle was in monitoring then. He was in technical later. And I think, he's one that I did interview. He would be a good one to talk to on these kinds of things, because he was there.
Okay.
Their instruments in those early days were cruder and heavier, and he'll tell about that, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's all high tech, but 5 years later, it's not anything like that. On health monitoring that we're going to be including, would you, if I sent you an email with it, would you maybe fill out a few paragraphs?
I'll try to.
A, make sure I was pointing in the right direction, and B, maybe, amplify on what we were talking about today. Talking short pieces.
If you have a reason to want to get more monitors' point of view interested, a dozen or so of them, it's open to more than that, but usually a dozen or so meet twice a month for breakfast in Richland at Sterling's.
Really?
I don't go continuously, but I go periodically.
We don't need, it probably wouldn't help to literally go there other than to introduce myself or something, but if we could find two or three others who'd be interested in just filling in a bit.
Right.
That would be good. And
well, Hank would be one good one. And Bill, if he's okay, he had...
You said he's in Benton City?
Yes. Let's see if I took out his number.
I think he's got cancer, but I think he got over it.
Writing have you been involved before you got dipped into this?
What did I used to do?
Yeah.
Months back? I, for the last 10 years, I've written computer books for a living. Just, popular press type for Cybex. And I did that, it was not full time, but I was always working on one book or another.
Guess what I was looking for today, and I got one. I hope it's good. We've been on email. Our son helped set it up since Christmas, which usually handled three reactors. So he was floating back and forth. So that was your next step on shift.
So,
and during an outage, he may spend most of the one with you, but. He may not, too. And during outages, they would often, if the exposure rate was higher, they would have another monitor who would probably be on overtime as an assistant, because you can't be two places at once, rear face and checking out people.
Okay, well, let's ask that then. Were you assigned to just one reactor as a health monitor?
No, I started out in one, but I was...
No, but on any given day, you were just at one?
Yeah, although your supervisor could change you, and that was resisted, but it was done.
Okay, And
if your reactor was operating to say, hey, we need exposure over here, how about us making a switch?
Okay.
Guys didn't care for that, but we did it.
How many other health monitors were with you at that reactor then on a normal shift?
You mean while we're operating or down?
While you were operating.
One? None. One per shift, except day shift had some permanent day shift.
Say that again. One per shift.
One.
But none others with you.
Right.
You were alone. You were the only person there.
Right.
If it was a discharge time, refueling.
Then you might have two, three, four.
Okay.
The rest of them probably are overtime guys.
Okay. But there was always one of them there. They'd never assign you somewhere else and not have a health monitor.
No, that was a no-no.
Yeah, okay. Great.
I had a weird one happen to me. I think it was F area. I'd been on the rear face and had come out, and my supervisor was on the front face. I guess somebody else must have been on the rear. And I got this weird call from the fireman saying, there's a fire in P-13, I think is what they called it. It was a building 3 or 4 miles outside of the F area enclosure that technical was using for we never knew what. And the firemen were saying, we can't go in until monitoring is there.
Oh, is that true of any building?
Well, that one particularly.
Okay.
And I should have called my supervisor, I suppose, and let him do it, but I didn't want to. I can address, went there, took a Juno in case there's alpha, and there was nothing that I could measure in the... It was just smoking. It wasn't burning.
Yeah.
Well, it was oily rags that they had left, but it was pretty serious because, and I knew it was because the big guys from town began appearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they shut down the project as a result of that fire. I think they were using some plutonium there in tiny amounts with something or other, but I never knew.
So it could have been a real problem, but they got kind of lucky as it was.
We didn't. Nobody was exposed. But I should have, and I was criticized somewhat for it. They said, well, why don't you tell your supervisor? Well, he was on the rear face. It would have taken an extra 15 minutes for him to undress and all. But probably that's what I should have done.
And why? Because you weren't supposed to leave, or because it was more his type of a job?
Too technical for me.
Yeah, okay. What about leaving your post? Was that an issue?
Well, I was, at that point, I was there just to check people out of the rear.
Okay.
So there was somebody else.
Yeah.
And I told control room that that's what I was doing. That's what you'd always do, you know, so they would know.
So how cautious were you as a monitor? I mean, were you, kind of sneaking around corners, or, was it pretty much,
no.
You relied on your instrument? And
yeah, you rely on your instrument, and I think in some cases maybe I was too much of a good guy trying to make it easier to get the job done, and I should have been. But
sure, that's always the pressure, I guess.
Right.
Although there could be the opposite pressure of, well, you protect me,
right.
Do your job. I know when I was working in construction, just home remodeling and stuff like that, at the end of the day, I was much more lax about climbing up a ladder with a power saw to cut something just to get it done.
Typical.
Yeah. And it's actually a real sign of maturity, the more you avoid that, I think. A certain kind of maturity.
This isn't, of course, part of our story, but one of the little funny side issues. When there finally, after all those years, was, I think, the first female in technical.
Mm.
And once in a while they had to go into the rear face, and the monitors, it was on day shift, and they got all interested. They knew that she and some other guys had dressed up and were in the rear face, and they were sort of thinking, who's going to check her out? What's going to happen here? Well, she thought ahead. She had a bathing suit on, let me see.
Oh, well, how how stripped down did people have to get?
Well, in the rear face, you had down to your underwear.
Really?
Okay.
Did you have just coveralls on over your underwear, or did you wear clothing in between?
Two pair of coveralls.
Wow. And that was it?
Yeah.
Okay, you had a bathing suit. Okay. Well, there it is, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's the transition that you have to make. Huh. And when you said she was in technical, what is that?
Well, we call them technical then, the support technical, what would you call them? Making changes in support of the reactor system, you know, proposed changes.
Okay.
Working out new ideas and testing them before they were put into production.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing they were involved in.
So were there days and days in a row when nothing ever happened? When you'd sit around smoking cigarettes and yakking because there wasn't anything to check? I mean, how relaxed did it get? Was there always, or were you always popping up and...
It could be pretty relaxed. I didn't smoke.
Did they allow smoking? Just out of curiosity?
Not in a danger zone or radiation zone.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't have...
In the control room they could?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I can't remember that specifically. But no smoking in any radiation. So.
As far as how busy it was, how hectic.
A really wide range.
Yeah.
From practically nothing or to very busy. Although I can't think of any time, unless it was a job that we had to stay with all 8 hours, even though it was low level, you normally wouldn't have an instrument in your hand more than maybe three or four. Of course, we had to write surveys of everything we did for the official record.
Right.
Describe it. Give the rates you gave. So there was that record.
When you were writing information for any individual, how many columns were there next to that person's name?
You didn't put their name in. I'm kind of surprised they didn't. You'd say monitoring technical or monitoring.
Oh, you weren't in charge of keeping their logs.
No.
That would happen literally through actual readings of their badges.
Right. Right.
And yet you were able to tell somebody... So when somebody had to go to the rear face, what would you make your decision on? What would you be looking at? After you read how much was back there.
His supervisor should have known, should have gotten a report where he stood.
So you would simply say, there's this much back there, and you don't have to say anything else.
That's right. Well, we say more than that. We would establish the dose rate. In other words, you can work in this 2 hours, and you'll have your day's dose.
So the supervisor would have to find somebody who had that credit available, or whatever it was called. Okay. And then that's what you were saying. You would write down that you went back there and checked and found this much.
And it would say average dose rate, maximum dose rate, things like this.
Okay. Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It
was a good experience. Right?
And you went into it as a greenhorn, right? I mean, showed up and all of a sudden we're working in reactors.
I was asking my friend, who, you know, had been a supervisor, well, I remember he had some company over and they were introducing me as somebody who was interested but knew nothing. And this one guy had a pretty explanation. He said, well, you would kind of think of a radiation source as a fire. You know, as you get closer to it, it's going to be hotter.
Yeah.
And we use that term all the time, hot, hot or cold. So that's kind of a way to say it. And then what they did at that time is hired in, I guess, when I had my C clearance, which is a preliminary one, and didn't have the... What's it
hire one. I worked on the badge crew with the regular crew. They'd have one new person who was waiting like me for final clearance. We worked out in the 300 area, and we would go to the various areas and pull the badges. They had a special deal, and these badges were quite heavy, and the film was about this big, and it was inside a shielded thing held on with two rivets. We had to punch out those rivets. And it was cleverly done because in the badge itself, which was about this big, they had the person's payroll number in dots so that it would make a permanent record of who it is.
On the badge itself?
On the badge itself. On the film itself.
Yeah.
Okay. And we would, and they were, it was film covered with paper again, so you could handle it, and then those were turned into the 300 area and they were developed.
Do you know what that process was? Well, you're a photographer, so when you say they developed the film, how did they know what the dosage was then? Do you know how that worked?
Oh, they had to read the amount of darkening against the standard.
So they just, like pH, I mean, they just measure it against...
Yeah, if you had, you know, the grayness of the film, how much it had taken on. And they were rather clever because the shielding I mentioned, I think, had a little window in it, so it would show the difference between this and this. And this was supposedly technical,
Okay. Usable
information. There are people that probably would know all that.
But it was nothing. There wasn't anything more exciting than this developing film, and then seeing if how gray it was, how exposed it was.
You developed it, and once it was dry, then the next job, once again by people in the 300 area, would read the film and establish the dose that it had been exposed to.
Do you know how accurate they could get? How fine? How many gradations they had between one end to the other? It wasn't really your job.
It wasn't. I guess I have no reason to think. I don't remember any odd numbers. I think maybe they did it to the nearest five, something like that.
Five would take it. What range do you think it went to?
I expect they could go up to a couple thousand because there might be some, and this is, I think, the reason they had some shielding here. For a very high dose.
Oh, right.
Would be the difference between them and here.
Okay. Now, to a person, that didn't matter, or did it? Getting, 10 hours of low dose versus 5 minutes of high dose?
I think that's a question that I'm not sure that's been answered yet.
Oh, okay. But in general, it was accepted as being equivalent, more or less. At the end of the month,
In general, people used to say, the low rates were not as bad, and yet I read some people didn't agree with that.
Okay.
So who knows?
I can probably get this elsewhere, but do you remember the different the terminologies you used to describe dosage?
MR.
Milligrams?
Milligrams.
And that was the standard that you would, anything bigger than that, you were getting into serious stuff anyway, so.
REM.
Yeah.
Right. I think it was a few years later that they changed it so it would include, I'm not sure what, I can't remember.
But a REM itself, I can look that up, but it's a dosage per hour. It's a quantity over time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, per hour is the rate you take it, but without the hour business in, that could be the dose as well. Like you say, I have a dose of 5 R on for this week.